Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Every time I'm talking to somebody, I'm second guessing everything that they tell me, but because I'm getting frustrated here because everything's in California.
Really upset that, you know, that these people aren't being truthful and are like hiding something, you know, and people are hurting. His family deserves answers, you know.
I'm real impressed with this detective. I mean, he at least tries to contact me. Every day he'll try to call me, or if not, I mean, sometimes I beat him to the punch.
You know, I always say that I rescued him, but like in a lot of ways, you know, he rescued me as well.
31-year-old Zach Kennedy disappeared from Long Beach, California on October 22, 2017. Zach had been at a friend's house that day and sent a text message to his partner John that afternoon, asking if he wanted to go to dinner later that evening. No one has seen or heard from Zach since. His friend claims that Zach left on foot that evening, but didn't know where he was going or even what direction he headed when he left. Zach was known to always be on his phone, and his partner became concerned after he was unable to reach him. Assuming that Zach was with some other friends, he contacted them and was shocked to learn that no one had seen or heard from Zach for days. After calling around to hospitals and jails with no luck, he decided to file a missing persons report. What happened to Zach Kennedy on October 22, 2017? All the clues keep pointing back to one place, but none of them have led to finding Zach. I'm Marissa, and this is episode 108 of The Vanished, Zach Kennedy's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. I came across Zach's case when I was contacted by his dad, Jeff, shortly after he disappeared. If you look up Zach's name, you'll find that there really isn't much information about his disappearance online, and some of it's even incorrect. That doesn't mean that the police aren't working this case, because they really are. We often see cases like Zach's being ignored since he's a gay man in his 30s with a history of drug use, but the Long Beach Police Department is aggressively working his case, which you will hear more about later. Zach grew up in Pennsylvania, but had moved out to California about 10 years ago. When I spoke to his dad, Jeff, he explained to me that once Zach left, he never came back.
My son's been in California for 10 years, so I haven't seen him for 10 years. The only contact that ever been made family-wise has always either been via text or phone.
I also spoke to Zach's partner, John. He met Zach back in 2011, after he'd already been in California for several years.
When I met Zach, he wasn't in a great place back in Pennsylvania. When he was back there, he was like on heroin. You know, and I guess a lot of people back east, there's a big epidemic. But like, you know, he was told me about it and like how he was on it there. And then when he came out here, he was, you know, definitely partying and with different drugs. But I mean, not that it was a drug. It was just, he was just depressed. He had been with another partner for like a while, like a year or two, or his partner just dropped him off at somebody's house one day and never came back. you know, and he felt deserted and was just really low. Like, again, his spirit was broken, you know, and he felt lonely. And like, when I met him, like, I was so excited to meet him, and boom, like, you know, we met the one night. That later that week, he came over, you know, to my house, just basically never left. You know, I was happy to have him. And, you know, I always say that I rescued him, but like, in a lot of ways, you know, he rescued me as well.
John told me a little bit more about Zach.
Zach was unlike any other person I've ever met. He thought of everything from a different point of view, and I can't really describe it. He just looked at everything in life like, I would say like he marched to the beat of his own drummer. Like, he just, everything you could think of, like, he would look at it differently, you know. And I thought he'd do it to like irritate me sometimes, but he didn't. He just looked at everything very uniquely, you know. And it was, you know, sometimes we get on my nerves because, you know, I just, no, you have to think of it this way, but you don't have to think of it that way, you know. That's just the way I thought, or the way mainstream society thought. But like, he would just, I don't know, like, he'd always try and look at the other side of things, or just come at it from a whole different angle. I just found one of his journals recently, and like, you know, just hearing his thoughts written out, it's like the way that he thought it was such a weird process, so interesting and special, you know, like, unique. Everything about him was very, very unique. Like, he just dressed nowhere the person I ever met, you know, just like layers and weird stuff, and was, you know, very handsome, but very self-conscious. It's just, I can't describe him. He's just like no one that I've ever met, and I'll never meet.
When I was speaking with John, he made a point to explain to me that Zach's drug use didn't define him. There was so much more to Zach and his life.
That was part of his life, but I mean, it wasn't the only part of his life. I mean, he had lots of stuff going on. He had, I've never explored anything like artistically, and like once we get together, like I always just do stuff around the house, or arts and crafts, or just, you know, paint or do something. And at first he would like, you know, when I started doing that, he'd like run away. Little by little he started doing it, and he really, in the last few years, really flourished in it. Started doing some really unique things, like, I don't know, just like going beyond things I'd ever done, like melting old records and, you know, recycle them, and old laser discs, and like melt them. And, you know, and a lot of people melt them into bowls. He started with that, but he would start melting them into like sculptures and weird art pieces, and just be melting like wax and crayons and putting dyes on them. And his brain was always going, like always looking for something else creative, you know, and was interested, you know. He had like 100 projects going at the house, and he was just always so excited about it.
One important aspect of the relationship that Zach and John shared was that it was an open relationship, which becomes important later on.
We were together. We had an open relationship, which I had never had before when I met Zach. Met him online, but I'd seen his profiles for a while. But for me, he was like my dream guy. I thought I would never, ever be with somebody like him, you know? It just was an open relationship, and then we kind of like struggled through it and first, and then it somehow through the years it really just ended up being the right thing for us and like worked out.
Zach's dad Jeff was the first person that I spoke to for this episode, and he gave me the basic rundown of the details of the case.
I mean, the best that I can tell you on up to the disappearances is he had left that morning on the October 22nd, and went to the so-called friend's house. I believe the guy's name's Scott. And while he was there, he had contacted his companion, John, and said, I'm going to be a few more hours. How about if you pick me up and we'll go out to dinner? I'll call you when I'm ready. And John agreed. Well, he never got the phone call. Now, that wouldn't stir any interest in my mind as well as it did in John's, because Zach was that way. Like, he would make a plan with you and then just blow it off, and then, you know, 2 days later try and recover from it and do it again. You know, it's just, you know, he was like that. And, or he would also even leave for a couple of days at a time, but he always had contact. Not with me, but with John, and that's his partner. So John started getting nervous towards the end of the week, and so he reported him missing on the 27th, so 5 days later.
After speaking with Jeff, I felt like I needed more details about the time leading up to Zach's disappearance. John was able to fill in those gaps for me. The last time he saw Zach was the day before he disappeared.
Saturday all day, like, we'd spent the day together, and we went shopping to Michael's, Arts and Crafts store, and a couple other places, and, like, went out to lunch, and Chick-fil-A, the place that just opened up, they opened up one at our house, and he was all excited, so we went there. Just had a great day. So he's like, I'm going to go to Craig's. I'm like, okay, that's fine, you know. And he also has, like, a bunch of art projects in process over there. So he's all, I'll be back, in, you know, tomorrow or whatever. I'm like, that's fine, so. And then the next day, I just got a text from him saying, oh, hey, I'm going to go run an errand and stop by a friend's house. Do you want to grab dinner later and maybe pick me up? And I'm like, yeah, just let me know when and where. And I never heard from him again. That was Sunday afternoon. Sunday, like 2 p.m., left Craig's house. And he went over to his friend, and I say friend loosely, Scott's house.
So we know that Zach went to his friend Craig's house the night before he disappeared. Craig was someone who helped Zach out and had Zach's phone on his account. When John contacted Craig looking for Zach, they both became concerned because they each had assumed that Zach had been with the other one. Since Zach's phone was on Craig's account, they were able to look at his phone activity and see who he had been in contact with leading up to his disappearance.
Craig helped Zach out a lot, paid for his phone. So when I talked to Craig, and Craig said, like, you know, he hadn't been there since Sunday. And then he's like, shit, I haven't seen him since Sunday. He's not here. He's at Craig's. I mean, he had lots of friends around Long Beach. You know, we'll go there for a couple hours, maybe. But he's always at one of our places, one or the other. So for neither one of us to hear from him, that was very alarming for me, because that doesn't happen. And I knew instantly that it was just a bad situation. Like, I was like, either he's in jail, or he's, you know, dead or something, or in the hospital, or I don't know. You know, but I just, my heart stopped. And that night, I couldn't really find anything. And then, like, I go over to Craig's, and he printed out his phone bill. And we started going through all the calls on it for the last day, like every text that went in and every call that went out, anything. And there was only a few numbers we didn't recognize. And then by the end, we called them and we figured out who they were. So they were all, you know, me, him, a couple of his other friends. And then the one number we weren't sure, it would end up being that guy Scott's number, the one that he went to on Sunday. Because people are like, well, maybe he met somebody, ran off. Anything's possible. I'm all, yeah, but there would be some trace of it in his phone. A text coming in, or a call coming in, or there would be something somewhere, a clue, you know, and there wasn't.
Craig was also able to provide information about Zach's plans on the day that he disappeared. Zach left Craig's and stated that he was going to see his friend Scott. The location data on Zach's phone backs this up, too.
We had the phone trace where it printed out the map and showed it's basically a straight line from Craig's house to Scott's house. It's like Craig lives on 10th Street, Scott lives on 8th Street, 3 miles, 4 miles down the road. And it just shows the phone going a straight line there. And it was there. And it shows that it was on till like about 11:30 that night there. And it turned off there. And that was the last time. That's the last time it was ever on.
When someone goes missing, no one really knows what to do. John tried calling around to check hospitals and jails with no luck. This is when he knew he had to go to the police.
I hesitated calling them the first couple of days because I didn't know what their reaction was going to be, or, you know, I just didn't know. I'd never had to file a missing persons report. But I mean, you know, the first 2 days I didn't panic. I thought it was odd when, you know, he didn't come home the first night, but it's happened before and he doesn't have to report to me, but he had dinner plans tentatively. But I thought, well, he probably just went back to his friend Craig's house from whatever errand he was doing, you know, got sidetracked on his art project over there because he worked on them over there too. And then, you know, I fell asleep and went to work the next day and then came home and he still wasn't home. I was like, that's odd. So I texted him, I kept playing for me. Yeah, what's up? Went to work the next day and came home and he wasn't home. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? This is not like him. If he would never go like more than a day without at least texting me ever.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Since John and Craig were able to figure out that Zach had gone to Scott's and the location information on his phone supported that, they decided to try to track Scott down to see if he could provide more information. Zach had only met Scott within the past month or two and had gone to Scott's house on a few occasions, but John had never met him. John was able to locate Scott online on a website called Adam for Adam, which is a social network designed for men to meet other men for friendship, dating, and so on. John sent a message to Scott asking if Zach was with him. John could see that Scott is typically on Adam for Adam much of the evening most nights, but after he got John's message, he logged off without answering. Several hours later, he logged back on and simply answered no. This was just the beginning of what John explained as Scott's evasive behavior. John replied to that message, explaining that he heard that Zach was going to his house on Sunday. He wanted to know if he made it there okay because everyone was worried. Zach wasn't in trouble. They just wanted to know that he was okay. Scott was online at the time but didn't reply until the following day with yet another one-word answer, a simple yes. John again replied with several more questions asking when Zach left, did he leave with anyone, did he take an Uber? Just trying to get some more information out of this guy. Hours later, John received this reply.
Stay till about midnight, rest on foot, didn't say where he was going, period.
John became even more worried after getting these responses from Scott. He felt the same way that I think most of us would. If a friend went missing after leaving your house, you would be concerned and want to help as much as you could. At the very least, he could have been more willing to help John fill in some of the missing pieces from that night. John, Craig, and another friend decided to go to Scott's house and see if he'd be willing to open up more in person.
At some point that week, we went over there, like I think the next night, to his house. He came to the door, he came out on the porch, shut the door behind him.
While they were speaking to Scott, they felt like he was still being evasive, because he wouldn't look them in the eye while answering their questions. We also know that Zach's phone died that evening around the time that Scott says that Zach left. John felt like it would have been extremely out of character for Zach to leave Scott's house on foot late at night. It would have been a 4 to 5 mile walk back home, which is something Zach was not known to do. He would typically call someone and ask for a ride. He also always had his phone charger with him, and John believes that he wouldn't have left without charging his phone first. Zach was also constantly using his phone like many of us do, and the activity suddenly stopped and later the phone shut off. John explained to me that all of these things were just so out of character for him. Jeff confirmed that there was lots of activity on Zach's phone, then nothing.
And I even questioned the officer, because I got to thinking, I'm like, you know, how do we know that the 22nd is the truth? The last contact any family member had with Zach was on the 14th of October. The officer said that Zach's phone was very busy that day up until it went dead, and then there's been nothing on it. They're pinging the phone, so there's been nothing on it since.
A witness came forward claiming to have been at Scott's house for at least part of the day when Zach disappeared. He initially told John that he had been there but left fairly early. Later, he contacted John again to tell him more information. What he stated that he witnessed has led John to wonder if possibly something happened to Zach, even an accident, while he was participating in some risky sexual activity involving drug use. The stories that he's been told, combined with Scott's behavior, has left him very concerned. I'm not releasing the details of what John was told because we don't want to hinder the investigation at this point. Zach has only been missing for about 2.5 months, and I strongly believe that we need to give the Long Beach Police Department a chance to do their jobs. John has continued to hear different stories about other people who may have been there the night that Zach disappeared, and other people allegedly talking about a body. One of the people who was rumored to be there that night suddenly moved out of state after Zach went missing. Are these just rumors, or are there pieces of truth in these stories? There's some concern that witnesses are afraid to come forward due to their own involvement with illegal drugs. The detective handling Zach's case is interested in finding Zach, not pursuing drug charges against anyone who may have information. John told me that he was nervous at first when speaking to detectives. He was worried that they were going to judge Zach.
They're not trying to, like, get a drug case on you. It's not worth their time. After I did the big tape recorded interview with the detectives for like a couple hours, I just said to them all, you know, I don't want you to think Zach is a bad person. No, he is a good person. Like, in every way, you know, and they're like, no, don't even go there. Like, you know, that's not what we're here for. We're not here to judge or, you know, judge somebody by what, you know, what they do in the bedroom and what social activities. Though we just want to bring him home. We just want to find him, bring him home. And like, if he's not alive, then we want to find answers and find out where his body, you know, whatever the situation is, but we just, that's all we want to do.
Since Jeff lives on the opposite side of the country, he hasn't been able to do the boots on the ground searching, but relies on the detective for updates.
I mean, I'm real impressed with this detective. I mean, he at least tries to contact me every day. He'll try to call me, or if not, I mean, sometimes I beat him to the punch, but just depending on what my work schedule that's like. But I talk to him Monday through Friday. We talk every day.
I spoke to Detective Scott Lash, who was handling Zach's case. Since it's so early on in the investigation, they aren't releasing much information.
Yeah, you know, we have to be very delicate on what we talk about because we do have an ongoing investigation going. And we're in the process of just, we're doing a bunch of stuff to try to locate him. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there already on social media, I think, and the pictures and Facebook and stuff like that. But we're just trying to do the other half of it, you know, the scientific half of it. What happened during that time period, that's what we're trying to figure out. You know, whether he stayed, whether he left. You know, if he left, did his phone go with him? Did his phone stay? You know, we're just taking the statements from people who told us the information, you know. So, you know, but it's our job as detectives that we have to kind of recreate all that. We just figure it out what actually happened, you know, what we can prove. Where's the phone here? When's the phone there? That kind of stuff. That's where the process of doing, you know, it takes a long time just because we deal with phone companies. We deal with a lot of different things that we have to do. That's kind of where we are right now. Everything else is just stuff as detectives that we have to try to figure out, you know, on our own. And a lot of that stuff we don't share with even the family, you know, the stuff we're doing. I mean, some stuff we'll do generic. Hey, this is what we're trying to do.
One thing that we do know is that they've done searches of the homes that Zach had been to.
Zach's companion, they came to his house and questioned, they searched his house. I don't know if they took any computers or phones out of his, but I know that they went to Scott's house, questioned him, remove phones, remove computers and everything out of there. And they're doing the forensics on that. And I know they've gotten information back because it's led them to more and more interviews of people. This is just a wild guess, but they've probably already interviewed at least a dozen people, maybe more, because the officer can only tell me as much as he can tell me. I don't know of any ground searches. I just know the home searches. There's a guy by the name of Craig, and that's another friend of Zach's who he pays for Zach's phone. And they went to his house. That's the three houses that I know that they were at. And then obviously there's just been a lot of people that have that are friends of Zach's that whoever contacted or was speaking with Zach that day on the phone, I know that they're contacting all those people and talking.
Just to give you a brief rundown of the timeline again, Zach went to his friend Craig's house on the 21st. He spent the night there, and the next day, he left telling Craig that he was going to see his friend Scott. The location data on Zach's phone supports this. He contacted John that day, asking if he wanted to go to dinner later, and that's the last time he spoke to John. While he was at Scott's, he was using his phone as he normally would, then all activity ceased and his phone powered down sometime later. His phone hasn't been used since and has never been located. No one immediately realized that he was missing, because his friends just assumed that he was with other friends. Once John felt like too much time had gone by without being able to reach Zach, he started calling around only to find that no one else had heard from Zach either. Since his disappearance, John and some of Zach's other friends have been searching for him, and they've heard different stories about what may have happened to Zach, but none of these stories have led to him. So what happened to Zach Kennedy on October 22, 2017? Did he really leave Scott's house on foot, or did something happen to Zach there? There's always a possibility that he could have met someone else, maybe using an app, but there just hasn't been any information to support that. I do believe that there are people out there who know what happened, and it's time for them to come forward. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Zach Kennedy, you can contact the Long Beach Missing Persons Detail at 562-570-7246. I'm also going to include a link in the show notes for submitting a tip online. At the time of his disappearance, Zach was described as 5'10" tall, weighing between 155 and 165 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. He was last seen wearing jean shorts and a black t-shirt. Zach also has several tattoos, including angel wings on his back, one star on each side of his collarbone, the initials FMO on one wrist and BSS on the other wrist. He has a red lotus flower on his right arm and another tattoo on his arm that says, "Hey Jules." On so many episodes of this show, we hear from families who aren't having a positive experience with law enforcement. So I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge the work that Detective Lash is doing, and also just for keeping in contact with Zach's family. It really means a lot to people to have that support. That brings us to the end of episode 108. I'd like to thank Jeff, John, and Detective Lash for taking the time to speak with me. If you'd like to reach me, I'm on Facebook where there's a page and a discussion group for the show. I'm on Twitter at The Vanish Pod and on Instagram as well. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishpodcast.com. Join me next week. I'll be covering a case from Washington. Thanks for listening.
I'm getting a little bit nervous about Scott's house and whatever. Just looking at histories of other cases and stuff, and Zach's age, and Zach's a male, and lives an alternative lifestyle and stuff. I'm just wondering if this is, you start reading into things and your mind starts going a thousand different directions trying to figure it out. I mean, I could see that Zach having to do something for drugs, he would do it. He wouldn't care.
I didn't celebrate the holidays this year like at all. It's not a year to celebrate for me. And people are like, "Oh, you gotta stay positive," and he'll come home. And I'm like, I appreciate their sentiment, and but I know nothing would make me happier than to be wrong and have him come home, you know. But I can't describe it. I feel like his energy, as soon as that Tuesday hit, and like I found out it hit him and it clicked, I was like, I felt like he was gone. Like his energy was not here. And I never realized that that's that connection with him, but like I could just feel it. I didn't feel him around anymore. Like, I don't know. I can't describe it. You know, and I know it sounds weird and like I'm just being negative, but like it's not. I've just never had that type of experience, you know, but I've never lost anybody like this before either.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.